Welcome into this edition of Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lab. We've returned home from Southport, England, back at our home studios, which Rex, for those who are following along on YouTube, and again, if you are not following along on YouTube, strongly suggest you do so. Go to the Golf Channel page on YouTube, and you can find us in there. This is the grand debut of your new home studio. It's the same office. It has just gotten a little bit of a remake. For those who are watching along on YouTube, can you narrate for them? And those who are potentially listening on audio, can you describe it in intimate detail?
Well, the background is similar. So it has the flag from the Parris Island golf course, Marine Corps Recruit Depot. You recognize that. I think you might have one of those.
I do.
That's an Emmy. That's Augusta,
which is really cool. I don't know if you can actually see it. It's like a painting of Augusta with azaleas and whatnot.
Beautiful.
Very, very cool. Yeah. So it's all new. I would give you a spin around, but I can't because it's still a little bit of a train wreck in here.
It has been a little bit of a war zone. Bunkmate, your wife, also did have a little detail. I thought it was a nice touch personally.
Yeah.
Just sort of a personal touch. Do you mind showing that as well? Yeah. Yes, folks, that is a young Rex. Is that your high school graduation photo circa 1963? What is that?
Graduated in 1986. Thanks for saying it. I believe this was my headshot when I first started working at the Orlando Sentinel. So that would have been 1992, I believe that is. Look at that full head of hair.
Oh, my God.
Look at that handsome guy.
You kind of look like a young Doug Ferguson, which is a little bit scary. We are recapping the Open Championship as well as the major championships in 2026. And Rex, before we move on to the other major championships in this calendar year, the Open was really spectacular, particularly the way that Ryan Fox played over those last six holes, making four birdies, some of the bad luck he got, just sort of shrugging it off. It really seemed like his win resonated in a powerful and a meaningful way, and it certainly seemed like a nice antidote to what was a pretty controversy-filled Open Championship at Birkdale.
Yeah, it was a warm and fuzzy ending, too. So you're right. It was not. It wasn't a warm and fuzzy week by any stretch. We'll get into that a little bit. But I think it was funny. Trevor came walking in, my middle son, this morning, sort of grousing about. He put a bet. He's a gambling. He has a gambling problem. And again, say it. He's very much a degenerate. But he came
Hello,
rolling
DraftKings.
In.
If you are listening, we have you just guys, the man for you.
That's right. The crown is his. He had put a bet on Cam Young early in the day, and it was whatever the number he got. He was very, very happy with it, and he was so angry. And because of how it all played out, he had an opportunity to cash it. And he called Ryan Fox a Neanderthal. And I turned and I'm like, he's one of the sweetest men in all of golf. You can't say, like, you may be mad about your bet, but don't say that about Ryan Fox. It was pretty amazing. We're going to do some grades here. And I would say, I mean, style points, grittiest, gutsiest. We can keep going down the list the way he was able to finish. I love the mentality. And you and I did this on Sunday night's podcast, which did not go in linear. Unfortunately, we had some storage issues. It seems like we had some connectivity issues,
you had some storage issues. Some of us, their file was clean as a whistle.
So I used the Royal We had some storage issues. We had some connectivity.
Our show issues. Had some storage issues.
But if you look at the way he finished, I just love the idea that he stood on the 18th tee, pulled driver, told his caddy, I'm going to live with the consequences. Like this goes back to, I always thought it was one of the coolest stories you ever heard from Phil Mickelson telling Bones McKay there in the trees right of 13 when he won the Masters that, yeah, I have to hit a heroic shot. Eventually, if you're going to win the Masters, you have to hit a heroic shot. And that's what Ryan Fox did. He hit a couple of them coming down the stretch, but the one at 18 is going to stand out.
It certainly is reminiscent, really, of Cameron Young, remember, at the Players Championship, standing up on the 18th tee at TPC Sawgrass, telling his caddy, I'm going to hit the best tee shot of my life. And he did. He busted at 375, longest drive in recorded history via ShotLink on the 18th hole at TPC Sawgrass, going on to win that golf tournament. Very similar mentality for Ryan Fox staying and saying, I need to go for it. I need to go after this tee shot. And if I stuff it up, his words, I will just live with the consequences. All he did was stuff it down the narrow strip of the fairway, 330 yards, leaving himself a 9-iron in and the birdie. A lot of talk about the pace of play, how refreshing that was, particularly during a week, Rex, when the three balls of the Open Championship were taking about 5.5 hours. This is just a guy who gets on with it, doesn't want doubt to creep in, is full of conviction, full of confidence, even if he wasn't necessarily full of calm on that 72nd hole, he certainly exuded it. and was a very deserving champion that, again, I think resonated pretty deeply. One of the stories that kept trickling out of the Open was Bryce DeChambeau. And those in the comment section were like, yes, we don't have to listen to or talk about Bryce DeChambeau for another 262 days before Masters Thursday. Not so. Our pal Jeff Shackelford in his newsletter reported that Bryson actually mentioned that he wanted to call President Donald Trump while meeting with rules officials to potentially have a situation like we saw with the U.S. men's national team in soccer, where he got a red card rescinded. What did you make of that news break? And to be honest with you, I wasn't all that surprised.
You can't be that surprised. And I'm surprised it took so long for someone to nail it down. Good for Jeff Shackelford for getting it in his newsletter, because what we saw, I mean, we saw for the better part of 2 hours him arguing this call, this penalty with the RNA officials. He was, the word we used is petulance, and I'm just going to circle back around to it. And the idea that he had also dropped the line that if you give me this penalty, I'm not coming back tomorrow, it shoehorns, it fits, it's totally on brand for someone who in that situation really wanted to dig in. And again, I don't want to talk about Bryson anymore either. I know it's not going to be until the Masters when we touch on this, but everything has been covered. And I felt compelled. Fred was actually very happy with me. I actually did file a column yesterday on my way home, because I just looked at the week for Tommy Fleetwood and I looked at the week for Bryson DeChambeau. And the reason I picked those two is they kind of came off the course on Sunday at the same time. And you had pretty much all of England, it felt like, sort of just thrusting all this love and all this encouragement to Tommy Fleetwood.
Thrusting all this love.
All this love, yes. Probably need to workshop that one. But it just throwing all this love in his direction. However, and he was just so excited about it, and he was smiling. And this is someone who clearly the competitor, the deep down competitor, wanted to win. Like, there's a part of him, I'm sure, that was pretty bummed that he had an opportunity to win the Open Championship and he didn't pull it off. But you could not find anyone on property who was happier and more content than Tommy Fleetwood. On the opposite end of the spectrum would have been Bryson DeChambeau. He was grousing. He was grumpy. He was harumphing his way. He kind of gave a high five to his team on his way out. Didn't talk to the media again. Again, I'm not quite sure why he would have chosen Sunday to talk to the media after everything that happened. And I just, the dichotomy between those two is striking, because neither one of them went home with a Claret jug. That went home with Ryan Fox. But both of them seem to be hitting in completely opposite directions.
I'm still surprised by how many.
Why would I use
thrusting? I have no idea why you said that. I'm very surprised still, Rex, of how many people continue to defend Bryce DeChambeau as it relates to this. And look, I think you can still quibble with the actual rules infraction by the letter of the law, then yeah, the RNA was pretty convinced that this was a clear and obvious violation. Again, intent does not matter, but had he cleared a path for his backswing, the RNA determined that it was pretty clear. I understand, you know, if you watch that video and it doesn't seem conclusive to you, like, I get it. And maybe you don't think that he should have been penalized. But the actual reaction, Bryson's reaction to it, there's something to be said for defending yourself if you think that this is an injustice, or you're convinced that you did not do anything wrong and you had ample evidence to do so. But the manner in which he was defending himself, petulantly, threatening, knowing that his withdrawal from the golf tournament would potentially plunge the rest of the weekend into chaos, it was such a bad look. And the more that we're hearing about his interactions with rules officials and scoring, the more that we're hearing about him potentially trying to summon Donald Trump across the pond to step in and have some sort of action, which obviously did not have any effect on the RNA's decision. The day later, marching into Mark Darbin's office at the RNA Championship office and requesting his scorecard, who knows for what reason. I would assume it'd be for content reasons or content purposes, but who really knows? It's so strange to me that he continues to be defended. And Roy McIlroy, who is really the only player to step in front of the microphone and call Bryson out, the amount of people who are blasting Rory and sort of circling back to some of the quote-unquote performative elements of Roy McIlroy's career, I don't understand it at all. I feel like we need to have a better definition of what performative is. Performative is fake, phony, not genuine, hamming it up for the cameras in the crowds when that's not really how you typically behave. Rory is anything but performative in my career. He is as emotional of a star player as we've ever seen. He changes his mind a lot. He acts that way on the golf course. There are no performative, there are no phony elements to Rory McIlroy's behavior. But if you look at what's happened with the Bryson DeChambeau over the past decade, particularly since sort of the paradigm shift after leaving for LIV Golf and sort of the character rebuild culminating with the 2024 U.S. Open, it has certainly been a dramatic shift.
I'm with you. I don't quite understand where this narrative sort of shifted, because anyone who watched that exchange on Friday between Bryson and the rules officials, you could immediately taken away the fact that here's someone that's not getting their way, and they're going to sit and pout, and they're going to be petulant about it, and they're going to act like a child. And that's what Bryson did in that situation. I'm going to flip it, though, a little bit, and say this is why the PGA Tour needs Bryson back, because you need this narrative. Those two players are so polarizing, and I hate to admit it, but it's good for you and I. It's good for storytelling. It's good for news. It's good for golf. People want to pay attention. I was on Twitter yesterday, just like everyone else, and scrolling, and it's amazing how this particular issue isn't going away. Everyone still has an opinion on it. Everyone is still jumping on one side or the other. You're right. I'm kind of with you. I don't particularly understand. I think when it comes to Rory, you nailed it. He has been nothing but genuine, I would argue, over the course of his career. What he said about Bryson was simply a reaction to, yeah, I saw it in real time. I felt like something was going on. And then when this transpires into the night where he's sort of holding the RNA and the Open Championship hostage, none of that was a good look. However, I keep going back to this is why he is such an important element when it comes to golf. Not only is he really talented, and we saw that for the first time this season in the major championships at Royal Birkdale, but he's also one of those elements that you need in good storytelling, because I'm not going to call him the villain, because I don't think that's fair, but he's certainly the anti-hero in this particular situation.
Yeah, there's drama, there's tension, there's competitive friction. All of those are important to the every week PGA Tour. It's clear that there's no love lost between those two players. It's hard to see that there would be any sort of reconciliation for the time being. Just very, very struck by the dichotomy in opinions and what the overall takeaways from both of those two performances. And again, Rory was asked those questions and answered honestly and candidly about Bryson, who again had ample opportunities to defend himself and to give his point of view, and instead all we're left with is either speculation or source reporting as it relates to Bryson DeChambeau's conduct and sort of his opinion on how the entire thing went down.
No, that's a great point. And I wanted to make the idea that, okay, he didn't want to talk to the media, and that's 100% his right. I think you and I and Eamon Lynch and most of us in the journalism, golf journalism business have all come to the conclusion that absolutely not. He doesn't owe the media anything, but he probably owes the fans something on this front. And if he wants to control his own narrative, I'm really curious why he hasn't gone to YouTube and sort of sat down and tried to explain what happened and why it happened over the course of a week. At least try to tell his side of the story. I don't get that.
I'm sure he will at some point, perhaps with a couple of days of reflection, he will get to that point. Rex, what overall grade, since we're doing this, what overall grade would you give Bryson, who again entered Birkdale with an opportunity to complete the slambo and miss all four cuts in a championship year? Instead, it's three missed cuts to begin the year and then a tie for 14th after a difficult Sunday in which he triple bogeyed the 11th hole.
You're going to lean into that, the slambo, until eventually it catches on. You're absolutely going to lean into it. I think both of us were prepared to give him an F, because I think I did in the punch shot leading into the Open Championship last week. I picked Bryson to be the most disappointed leaving Royal Birkdale. I thought he was going to miss another cup, because there was nothing in his body of work in the Grand Slam events that suggested he was ready to take that next step and become the player that we all know he is. The play we saw out of him, at least on Thursday and Friday, and a little bit over the course of the weekend, was brilliant. I think you called his ball striking sublime. That's 100%. And it was his iron play, the one area where we've been very critical. So if I was going to give him a grade, you have to look at it from 30,000 feet. You have to take everything in totality. In this particular case, C minus. We didn't exactly script this out, but that's why I feel comfortable.
Yeah, I would probably make it a C minus or D. And it is a shame, because of all of the histrionics off the golf course, they certainly overshadowed the play that I thought was very inspired by Bryson, particularly over those first 36 holes. The driving was back to a level that we'd seen over the past couple of years that had sort of fallen off, at least at the halfway point of the 2026 season. The iron play, as you mentioned, the ability to hit lower shots and shape different shots, the sort of criticism that he received from three-time Open champion Nick Faldo about not being able to necessarily overpower a golf course, certainly with this setup, certainly with the dry conditions, certainly with the way that he was hitting the driver. That was the best strategy for Bryson DeChambeau at Royal Birkdale. And at least for a while, he was able to pay it off in a pretty significant way, had a chance really going into the final round. Bogeyed that 18th hole on Saturday, which really felt like a lot of steam let out and just didn't quite have it on Sunday as well. Didn't make a birdie until his back nine. So I'm with you. C minus or a D. When you look at the sort of the major championships in the totality, when we put the Open Championship in our rearview mirror, what stands out to me? And I'll start this conversation by saying, when you think back to the beginning of 2024 and you look at the major championships, it was Scottie Scheffler, it was Rory, and it was Xander Schauffele, who through the 2026 Masters had captured seven of the nine majors and the opportunities that they had, those three marquee players. We saw over the last three major championships of 2026 a little bit of a shift, a little bit of a return to the norm. And I think overall, when you look at the major championships, it was a pretty eclectic list of winners, and it was certainly a variety of skill sets that was rewarded, which is what you want from the majors.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good stat, because you have those three who were dominating the biggest events, and there was nothing to suggest that that wasn't going to continue. This year was very much a return to parity, is the way I would say it. I don't think either one of us would have predicted that Aaron Rye or Ryan Fox were going to be among the major champion winners coming in to this season, to the Grand Slam season. Even Wyndham Clark, to a certain degree, just because of the ebbs and flows of his career. The talent is certainly there. I think that the mental battle is always going to be prevalent when it comes to him. But yeah, I think 100% it's the parity. When you break it down, 14 players made the cut in all four major championships this year. And as I was kind of going down that list, the one name that stands out for obvious reasons is Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy and Xander Schauffele. Those are three of those 14. Rory's the only one that won one of those major championships. But if we're doling out grades, I'm not sure if I give Rory an A, because he was really a non-factor in the other threes. Maybe an A minus, because he was there. He was sort of around for the weekend. And of course, what he did at the Masters was beyond special. But I don't think anybody gets an A, because it was just one
of
those seasons.
You can't give Rory McIlroy an A for winning a major championship and defending his title at the Masters? If you win a major championship, it's an A season, regardless of whether you were able to continue that in the other Grand Slam events. Come on.
You can make that argument. I still would shy away from the idea. He made the cut in the other three, and certainly that counts for something as well. It's not as though he was a complete non-factor in that. But I my guess is, if we could get Rory to join us on this podcast, he wouldn't give himself an A for the major championship season as a whole.
I don't know about that. At this point in his career, 36, 37 years old, he's got about a half decade more of a window, winning one major championship. Again, at this point, you know, when you think back to 2025 Masters, he had what a major championship at all in more than a decade. So I think this is proof that he's on the right track. He did have an opportunity to win the PGA, remember, Rex. He was three shots back heading into that final round. Clearly didn't have it at either of the summer opens, which was certainly disappointing to him. It was certainly a better version of what we saw in the 2025 majors. Remember, we had that climax at Augusta National, then sort of that period where he was adrift, trying to figure out what exactly he was going to be doing with his life and what his goals that he wanted to set for him moving forward. That at least was a little bit understandable. This one, it seemed like he poured all his energy back in to the Masters and winning that one, and just wasn't quite able to sustain it for whatever reason. I would sort of point to competitive rustiness and the fact that he just, quite frankly, didn't play many regular season tournaments between the Masters and the end of the Open Championship. He's really sort of backloaded what his competitive schedule is going to be in 2026, reprioritizing some of the tournaments on the DP World Tour, the National Opens, and some of the appearances that he's going to be making at the back half of the year. But I think it could potentially have been at the expense of the majors. How about Scottie Scheffler? We talked a little bit about him on the Sunday night show. I don't think any of us can give him an A for his performance, but how strict of a grader will you be for what he accomplished in the majors where he was an over?
I'm sitting here staring at his record in the major championships this year, and I'm thinking to myself, maybe I would give him an A. No, of course, he didn't win this season. The Masters, where he finished runner-up, was the highlight of that year, and it was a heck of a highlight. He didn't finish outside the top 15 all season long. He had a chance to win the Open Championship. I can make an argument he had a chance to win the U.S. Open. No, I don't give him an A, but I think I'd give him an A-.
I would give him a B+. Technically, he's going to go down historically as having a runner-up finish at the Masters. If you watch that golf tournament, at least over the final hour, you'd be hard-pressed to say that that was – he really had a great opportunity to win. He birdied 15 and 16, if memory serves. Was unable to convert 17 or 18, which, again, if you'd put gotten in the clubhouse at 11 or 12 under par, I think that could potentially could have altered that golf tournament. PGA didn't have it. That's part of a period of the season, however brief, that his ball striking wasn't quite up to snuff. But look, he was in the final group at the U.S. Open playing alongside Wyndham Clark. Didn't quite have it in that final round as well. And look, he gave himself an opportunity again on Sunday at Royal Birkdale. It was his putting that really let him down on those slower links greens for more than 60 holes, Rex. He did not hole a birdie putt outside of 7 feet and hit 31. Yes, 31 approach shots. Of the 72 holes he played, 31 of them were inside 20 feet, and he did not win the golf tournament. This is a player who it might not matter that all that much to him by the end of the season if he collects another FedEx Cup trophy, because obviously he's going to be going down and trying to measure himself against the historical greats in the major championships. But I still expect Scottie Scheffler is not done winning golf tournaments in 2026. He just didn't quite happen to nab one in the Grand Slam events. When you look at the cumulative score among the players who made the cut in all four majors, Scottie and Sam Burns led the way at 20 under par. How about Cameron Young, the Players Champion, Rex? He had an opportunity again to win the Open. There was a social media clip of him on the range when he didn't necessarily know that Ryan Fox had won the golf tournament, but he could hear it based on the cheers of when he stuffed it in close on 18 and then when he made the birdie putt, him putting away his club in the bag, knowing that his opportunity to win the Open had come and gone, was certainly a pretty poignant moment. But how do you sort of evaluate Cam Young's major championship season in 2026?
I'm going to probably anger the folks in Ponte Vedra Beach about this, but if you give the players, let's give it half major championship status at right now. So he won half a major this year, maybe even more, depending on getting style points for the way he finished. You brought it up. I mean, the drive on 18 at TPC Sawgrass, I think that's going to be one of the highlights of the year when all was said and done. So I'm going to give him a B+. Because he certainly was consistent throughout the course of the major championship season. And I don't think you can dismiss how important or how much pressure there was to win the Players' Championship. And he also proved that you and I both will start using, he will be part of the conversation going into every major championship, at least in the near future, because of what he was able to do this season. He keeps taking a step. I'd make the same argument for Sam Burns, because it seems to me they're both moving in that direction. And Scottie Scheffler probably said it best, that he wasn't surprised that Sam Burns was in the hunt. Certainly no one is going to be surprised that Cameron Young is in was in the hunt on Sunday at the Open Championship, because they continue to put themselves in that position. And that's all you can do as a top player. We dismiss sometimes how difficult it is to win one of these big events. It's even more difficult just to give yourself an opportunity. Everything has to go right. You have to be consistent. You have to make sure you don't have one set of, you can have three bad holes that essentially take you out of the tournament. And I think that's what these two players are doing so well. So yeah, I'm going to give him a B.
I'm going to give Cameron Young an A-. He's just such a proper golfer. Like, I'm such a huge fan of Cameron Young, his game, his mentality. He shot 65 on that third round at the Masters to vault all the way into a tie of for the 54-hole lead with Rory McIlroy, who had that difficult day on Saturday when he was staked to the 6-shot lead at the halfway point. Again, gave himself an opportunity to win at the Open Championship, shooting 64. Yes, not a 63, as I mentioned on the podcast. There was a couple comments about that. I did correct myself a couple minutes later. Cameron shooting 64. And the thing that I like about Cam, Rex, is that, yes, he has so many runner-up finishes. I believe this is now his 8th runner-up finish on the PGA Tour. It's his 2nd in an Open Championship. Came close in 2022 as well when he shot that 64 and just couldn't quite keep pace with Cameron Smith. There's a fearlessness to him. You know, he's not scarred by any of the close calls that he's had in the past. He stands up on the tee and he just wants to rip it. It was evident on the 72nd hole at the Players' Championship. It was evident at the Ryder Cup when he went out first and delivered that point for the Americans. And it was clear even in the bunker on the 72nd hole at Royal Birkdale, where, he did not finish off the golf tournament the way that he would want. He had a 6-iron, tried to open up. He tried to hit the shot that would win. He tried to hit the shot that would allow him to finish at 10 or 11 under par, and he quite frankly didn't pull it off. That's easier to live with than him just playing sort of safe, him playing scared, him making a mistake that way. The fact that he goes for it again and again and is willing to get his heart broken, even if it doesn't work out, huge Cameron Young fan. I think this is a huge step for him to continually give himself opportunities in the major championships. Two of the four had great chances. Very, very impressive. How about John Rahm, who looked like he was going to be a part of the weekend story at the Open Championship, instead made three double bogeys on the weekend, including two wrecks, two OB tee shots on the first hole on Saturday and Sunday. What do you make of John Rahm's major championship season?
B minus. I might be a little bit too kind on that one. Of course, the runner-up finish at the PGA Championship would be the highlight of his season in the Grand Slam events. You're right. I feel like that first hole at Royal Birkdale was indicative of John Rahm's major championship season. You're right. I don't quite get how you do it twice. Once you kind of, if you've ever stood on that tee,
game left.
Yeah, I mean, there is out of bounds left, to be fair. I mean, it's actually the superintendent.
Take an iron.
You can do that. You can lay short of what was one of the more deadly bunkers, I would argue, on the golf course over the course of the week. But it was kind of indicative. It seems like there was always just one thing that held him back. It was always just one stumble where he had a bad nine holes or he got off to a bad start in this particular case. It happened twice to him over the course of the season. I felt like it was a step in the right direction after all of the narrative last year that maybe LIV Golf had taken some sort of the edge off. Maybe that 54 holes of team golf and with shotgun starts and loud music that had made him less competitive than maybe he was when he was playing on the PGA Tour. I'm not quite sure if that's true. I think there is something to be said for the fact that LIV Golf went to 72 holes this season. It seems like he played better in the major championships. It seems like he got his edge back a little bit more. Still a world-class player. I don't think either one of us are going to sit here and say that, yes, his major championship window has closed. That would be ridiculous. But it's a step forward, but he certainly isn't back to where he was before.
I would agree with that. I would go with a B minus as well. I mean, it's inarguable that his win rate, his top three rate, his top five rate, his top 10 rate has all suffered since he went to LIV Golf at the end of 2023. This is now three consecutive years without a major championship for John Rahm. And really, Rex, I would argue three consecutive years in which he really only gave himself about one great opportunity to win one. You think back to last year, Quail Hollow. It was that Sunday surge. He was actually tied for the lead as he headed into the back nine with Scottie Scheffler scuffling a little bit, a collapse there. At the PGA this year, he didn't necessarily do anything wrong. Like, he shot 68 in that final round. The putter just let him down, just as the putter let him down on the weekend at Royal Birkdale as well. He's just not quite up to the level that he was in the early 2020s, which, again, players' careers ebb and flow. It just has happened to coincide with his move to LIV Golf, and maybe you're looking at the golf courses and the golf tournaments that he's playing are not necessarily keeping him competitively sharp enough. They're not strong enough tests for him to sort of have a reasonable facsimile for what the major championships are going to be. I don't know that for sure, but the facts are the facts. This is three straight years without a major for John Rahm, a player who many of us thought was going to be a generationally great player. As you look back to the major championships as well, Rex, which moments, which shots, which tournaments will you view as the most memorable?
Well, Rory winning the Masters clearly is going to resonate. It not as much as the year before. And I kept thinking, well, did we get spoiled the year before because of the emotion, because of what it meant?
We did.
He'd spent a decade. We absolutely did. I mean, I think that's a once in a generation moment, him coming up the hill, the way he was just overcome by the emotions. Augusta was still really good. I still enjoyed it only because Rory made it good. For the opposite reason, he stumbled. He let everyone else back in. He could have won that by five or six shots and made it pretty, I don't want to say ho-hum, but taking all the drama out of it. Seems like Augusta delivers the drama each year, at least on Sunday afternoon on the second nine. The one that's going to stand out to me, though, is, and maybe this is a recency bias, is what happened on Sunday at Royal Birkdale. I don't think anybody anticipated you had that many players coming down the mix. I mean, we cannot lean into the fact that Cameron Young was done 2 hours
before the leaders finish up. I mean, it's amazing to think that someone did what we always talk about doing. And it usually can only happen at the Open Championship because of the way the conditions change. But he took advantage of an early tee time. He took advantage of not having quite as much wind. He made an incredible run and then sat around and made everyone come and get him. And what we've just touched on when it comes to Ryan Fox, I think that finish is one of those finishes, again, gutsy, gritty, whatever it is you want to call it, maybe even heroic statistically. And I leaned into this the other night. If you look at who had the best final round, at least compared to the field average, that's Aaron Rye. His final round was 5.5 shots better than the final round average at the PGA Championship on Sunday. That one is going to have to stand tall. And then, of course, Wyndham Clark, what he did. It's funny. I thought we were going to do something a little bit different on this. I thought we were going to.
We still have the Sunday show.
Sure. I thought we were going to do it a little bit different, but I was going to pick Wyndham Clark as leaving the most probably, and I'm trying to think of the best way of saying this, because he very much limped in. If you look at the way that final round transpired at the U.S. Open, it's not, if Ryan Fox went and took that title at the Open Championship, I would say Wyndham Clark almost kind of backed into it. And I'm not being disrespectful. I mean, he walked
backed
away.
Into it.
But if you look at it, at least statistically, he actually was the only one out of the entire four major winners who shot over par as relate to the field average that week. So he was the one that probably I would look at and think to myself that, nope, he didn't finish as strong as the other three, but he's still the champion.
This is such a nerdy thing to admit, but the major championships are so great because they're the only golf tournaments in which I feel butterflies too, because you don't know what's going to happen. You hope that you're going to be covering something that's historic, and we can document it both in print and here on the podcast show. And each and every major championship, Rex, was really dramatic and compelling in its own way, right? Like, you think of the Masters, and at the halfway point, it was Rory by 6 shots. I think that was a historic margin at that point of the golf tournament. And yet, with the second 9 to play on Sunday at Augusta National, it looked like Justin Rose was finally going to get his green jacket after so many tries. And so that sort of melodrama that played out, Rosie being the tragic figure at Augusta, once again, was sort of the enduring storyline there, other than Rory finally being able to celebrate with his family a major championship at the Masters. You think back what happened to the PGA Championship, it was such a log jam. What, about a dozen players had an opportunity to win in that final round? And instead, it's sort of unknown, unheralded commodity in Aaron Rye, who goes 6 under for his final 11 holes, that punctuation mark on 17, draining that 50 or 60 footer for birdie. You think back to the U.S. Open, and again, it looks like it's going to be a snoozer, right? Like, no player had ever coughed up a 6-shot lead at the U.S. Open. That's what Wyndham Clark had in that final round. But his poor play, the inspired performance by Sam Burns shooting 67 the final day, wanting to win one for his dad, the crowd that was so vicious and turning against Wyndham with all of the character storylines and the gambling undertones and all of that, that made for a really compelling final hour as well. And obviously, as we talked about on Sunday and earlier in the show, with Ryan Fox going for making 4 birdies in his last 6 holes, including the macho birdies on 18 and 13, really, really stand out. So yes, I'm not sure that the list of winners will go down on like the Mount Rushmore. We're not talking about an Aaron Rye or a Ryan Fox as being future world number ones or World Golf Hall of Famers potentially, but it doesn't mean that their performances weren't instantly memorable and will go down in tournament history as producing some of the most compelling moments. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. I don't know. That was just an appetizer. We may circle back and do even some more superlatives for the Sunday show, depending on how much content that we have to work with for the made for TV 52 minute edition. We should not have a problem, folks. We should be able to get that one on linear television while we'll be doing so from our home studios. So if you're looking for us at 9 and 11 a.m. Eastern time on Monday, we should be able to bring it to you. We're also going to have plenty of time for voices in the crowd, our listener comment section. If you want to be a part of the show, make sure you comment in the YouTube comment section. You guys can find us on the Golf Channel YouTube page. In the meantime, you guys know you can go to golfchannel.com for all the latest news, notes, and updates. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. We'll talk to you guys on Sunday night.
Thrusting love. What was I thinking?